So that is a really challenging talk to follow. Thank you, Beth. My name is Alex Stefanov. I'm a University of Michigan alum. I graduated 2 years ago with a degree in neuroscience. And I don't know enough about neuroscience to tell you guys about it. So tonight, I'm going to talk about borders. My talk is Crazy Exes or Exclaves, Drunken Surveyors, and Uzbeki Seas. So why should we even bother talking about borders? Well, literally, they're all around us. We can't avoid them. wars, we know that wars all over the globe have been fought over them, and they play a very major role in political decision making. And I feel like in order to look at our past and to understand where we're coming from, we can't ignore our geography. Our lines have a lot of very cool stories to tell. And of course, it allows me to come up here and talk to you guys and be a nerd. So borders are so important. Let me give you an example of that. The Republic of Kosovo gained independence from Serbia in 2008. And it was a very messy divorce. And the Kosovars wanted to make it clear to the Serbians that they were in a separate entity. So what they decided to do was to put the shape of their country on their flag. So that is Kosovo. Serbia is up here. And of course, Serbia says, no, you are not a separate country. And Kosovo says, check out our flag. We are. And we're in gold, too. My first section here is lines versus squigglies. And who can tell me the shape of Colorado, roughly?
Rectangle.
You're very right. You guys are going to be a great crowd. How about Maryland? That's right. Maryland looks like this. I don't know what to describe that as, except Maryland. So why are these so different? Well, it turns out that states to the west of the Mississippi have straighter lines, and states to the east are more squiggly. And the difference mainly is 1821. States admitted to the Union mostly before 1821 disputed with each other over rivers, access to water, land grants, 13 original colonies. It got messy. And so Congress around this time decided to appropriate line borders, which would split the states up into equal sizes. So you see Montana, Wyoming, and Colorado are the same height. So are North, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas. And there's actually a reason for that, because the expansive West needed to be split up equally. So while there's actually demographic equality in the East, it's more of a geographic equality to the West. Maryland, 0. Everyone else, 4. So let's come back to our cool state of Maryland, right there on the East Coast. Essentially, when Maryland was first thought up in the 17th century, it was supposed to look like this, much nicer, larger state, surrounded by Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. And Maryland came about when it split away from the Pennsylvania and Virginia colonies. This was all controlled by a guy named William Penn. And this is how I envision the state. Today, we know Maryland to look like this. So what happened? Well, let's start out with its neighbor to the south, Virginia, which was controlled by William Penn. And he insisted, now Maryland was supposed to be a home to Catholics on the East Coast. Meanwhile, Virginia was Protestant territory. William Penn insisted that when Maryland was given to Cecil Calvert, some British dude, requested that Maryland, the home of Catholics, would have all of the Delmarva Peninsula, which is this southern part. And of course, William Penn said, nope, we're gonna get access to the Atlantic Ocean beyond the Chesapeake Bay, so we're gonna have the southern part. And so of course, because the king was also Protestant, he said, oh, fellow Protestants want land. Let's give it to him. The founding fathers wanted a place for our nation's capital, and they chose the Potomac, which was a nice inland area that also had access to the sea through the river. And so they drew an even square right there. That would be between Virginia and Maryland in neither state, but it would actually be dead center. Virginia said, no way, Alexandria and Arlington are ours. But Maryland wasn't able to get to the decision in time, so of course, D.C. is now just half of a square. To the north is Pennsylvania, and again, William Penn had a very large influence over the area. And we see here Philadelphia, which was a major port city. And William Penn insisted that the southern border would be drawn a little bit further south to include Philadelphia within Pennsylvania. And of course, Delaware, which was also Protestant territory. Now, this is an interesting story. Let's go back to Cecil Calvert for a second. He said, well, why don't we just draw a line at something called Fenwick Island and draw it west? And Delaware said, Hell yeah, let's do it. Why was Delaware so excited? Well, because Cecil Calvert's map showed Fenwick Island at Cape Henlopen, and he thought the line would be here. And instead, he drew it too far south, and Delaware was like, yes, let's do it. So that's what happened with Maryland. Minnesota's middle finger to Canada. Let's move further out west to the Midwest here and check out another international border. As you guys may be familiar, the northwest angle is this northern blip that kind of juts out of Minnesota towards Canada, and it's a big source of pride for Minnesotans. It's all over their coins, their signs, and it's shown as this piece of land coming out. It turns out that the northwest angle can actually be a source of pride for all Americans. And even though it's represented as land, it's actually mostly water. If we zoom in, we'll see this really weird border coming up, and it kind of cuts through this water, and then just leaves a chunk of Canada inside the United States. Yeah. How did that happen? Well, long story. Begins with something called the Mitchell Map in 1755. And the Mitchell Map was drawn up to delineate the borders of the East Coast. So naturally, you would use it for Midwestern geography. the Mitchell Map essentially was used in something called the Treaty of Paris in 1783, which ended the Revolutionary War, and to draw the border between the British and the Americans, the British in Canada and the Americans to the south. So we're going to concentrate on that area there. A little note about the Treaty of Paris. On the left here, we have the Americans, and on the right, we're supposed to have the British. What happened? Well, they were so pissed off that they lost the Revolutionary War that they actually decided not to pose for the treaty signing portrait. So the Mitchell Map said, let the border run through the Lake of the Woods to the northwesternmost point thereof, and from thence on a due west course to the River Mississippi. Seems pretty straightforward, except that there are three problems with that. The first is that the Mitchell Map has a really cool inlet of the Hudson Bay right over where the border is supposed to go, so no one knows exactly where the border is supposed to be. Secondly, the River Mississippi actually starts south of the Lake of the Woods, not west, so no western line to draw there. And the third problem was that the British were, you know, so ready to get this national embarrassment out of the way that they wanted to just accept whatever proposal was thrown at them. So Americans essentially said, well, let's draw the line through the Lake of the Woods to the northwestern corner and then south of the 49th parallel and then west of the Pacific Ocean. Easy peasy done. And that's what left that piece of Canada in the United States. So let me show you guys this really cool video of Al Franken drawing the United States map from memory. He's a senator from Minnesota. Of course, he's going to start with Minnesota, because it's such an important state. Look how much detail there is in Minnesota. There's a northwest angle, all nice, nicely done, and of course, Michigan looks like crap. Barely even a mitten. Come on, Al. Take your time. Kind of weird that he starts with the squiggles and then goes over to the lines. I would have done it the other way, but. And of course, Alaska looks nothing like Alaska, and Hawaii nothing like Hawaii. USA 2, Canada 0. It's like a soccer game. So let's go back to the 49th parallel that we visited earlier. There it is, right there. And it turns out that straight lines can cause a lot of messes, too. This is where the 49th parallel ends, just north of the state of Washington. It forms the border between Washington and British Columbia. And unfortunately for Canada, there's a problem. The border was drawn too far west, and it reaches a midway point between Vancouver Island and the mainland. And it leaves this little unfortunate peninsula within the United States. So
Sorry, Canada. Point Roberts is ours. Drunk and missing Carolinians. Let's go back to the Mitchell map. And of course, as I said before, this was supposed to be a really good map for the East Coast geography. Turns out it kind of fucked up in that too. Let's concentrate here on the southern eastern seaboard. This is North and South Carolina as they appear today, and it has this weird border between the two of them that's stepwise. How did that come about? Well, the border was supposed to look like this. Nice and neat, right? But today looks like that. And so essentially, King George at the time got a request from South Carolina, because they were more prosperous, to split away from North Carolina. So King George decided to draw a border northwest line that would start 30 miles south of the Cape Fear River mouth and continue up to the 35th parallel. But the problem was that the South Carolinian team decided that they wouldn't even show up because they were underpaid. So the border was drawn too short, and then North Carolina said, cool, let's start drawing a border west. Until they hit something called the Catawba tribe, who insisted that they would be within South Carolina because they were more prosperous. So the border was drawn north, and then starts to kind of veer further north. Why is it so crooked? Well, local legend says that locals would bribe the surveyors with moonshine in order to keep their land within one state or another. And of course, drunken surveyors don't make for really good line drawers. So they would start drawing the line further north. Of course, the official account is that there were magnetic anomalies in Charlotte, right there. Right. And then when they realized their mistake, they decided to draw the border further south to reach Georgia again. I recommend you guys check out these two. This is How the States Got Their Shapes by Mark Stein. It's a great book, 50 chapters, each chapter on each of our 50 states. It spawned a show called How the States Got Their Shapes on the History Channel, one of the last good shows on the History Channel, by Brian Unger. He's very funny. Let's sail the seas and look at some international borders. To be or not to be landlocked. So if you guys are thinking of traveling abroad and buying a house on a nice beach and somewhere where you'd have a great expanse and, you know, reach to whatever seas you want, here's some places not to do it. The Democratic Republic of the Congo is the second largest country in Africa, and yet it only has 23 miles of coastline. And that's because Angola, surrounded on both sides, Angola has something called the Cabinda province right there, and they insist on holding on to it because it is just off of the largest, one of the largest offline, offshore pipelines, oil fields in the world. So, of course, Angola is going to hold on to it. Bosnia and Herzegovina is in a very similar situation. It has 12.5 miles of coastline. On either side is Croatia and its exclave Dubrovnik. Iraq, a country we're unfortunately very familiar with, has about 36 miles of coastline. And in 1980 and 1990, they invaded Iran and Kuwait in order to get more access to the offshore oil fields and failed miserably. And of course, America got involved in that for decades to come. Slovenia has about, 29 miles of coastline on the Istria Peninsula. To the north is the important port city of Trieste in Italy. And to the south is Croatia. So we're talking about countries that have barely any access to seas, and then there's also landlocked countries. But then there's something called countries that are doubly landlocked. Essentially, that means countries that are entirely surrounded by other landlocked countries. And there's only two in the world. The two countries are Liechtenstein, which is between Switzerland and Austria. And the other one is a funny-sounding one called Uzbekistan, which is between Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan. So you may be asking, Alex, how is Kazakhstan considered landlocked? Isn't it on the Caspian Sea? Well, technically, the Caspian Sea is just a large, salty lake. So sorry, Uzbekistan, you're still doubly landlocked. Let's look at Uzbekistan's one sea, little lake, called the Aral Sea. And this is what the Aral Sea looked like in the 1960s. Nice, pretty sea with the border through it. This is Uzbekistan to the south, Kazakhstan to the north. And this is the progression of its shrinking over the following decades. And this is the Aral Sea today. The reason for that is because when the two countries were under Soviet control, Soviet irrigation projects diverted water away from the Aral Sea, allowing it to evaporate, and with it evaporated the Uzbeki fishing industry, and people lost their jobs. Yay! So it turns out that humans can have very drastic consequences on our environment. Yeah. You got India, my Bangladesh. So let's go on. Go ahead and start with some simple exclaves. The similarity between an exclave and an enclave is it's a piece of a country within another that's separated from the rest of the country by another state. Exclaves have another way out, while enclaves are entirely surrounded by that other country. So some simple exclaves would be the Nakhchivan Autonomous Republic, which is a piece of Azerbaijan separated by Armenia. Long history of genocides and refugees moving around. Don't worry about it. The Kaliningrad Oblast in Russia ensured that Russia would have a warm port on the Baltic Sea after World War II, and they managed to hold on to it even after the USSR collapsed. And the Temburong District in Brunei, which is separated by Malaysia, comes about as a result of long power struggles between the British, Spanish, Japanese, and Brunei Empire. So everyone's happy. Coming back to the stands for a little bit, you see this really complex border between Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan that kind of weaves and zigzags and leaves a lot of enclaves. So basically, pieces of Uzbekistan are within Kyrgyzstan, pieces of Tajikistan are within Uzbekistan. It's a mess. And it's because of a mountainous region kind of confuses the geography there. You even have crazy enclaves in Europe, in Western Europe. To the east of Belgium are Belgian railways, which run into Germany. But Belgium insists that the soil under them, under the rails, is Belgian. So you literally have this German enclaves within Belgium, with just the railway being within Belgium. You even have an enclave city. So to the north of Belgium is the Netherlands, and they share something called Barl. Belgian part is called Barl-Hertog. The Dutch part is called Barl-Nassau. Let's go ahead and zoom in a little bit here. So this is a city that consists of a total of 24 enclaves. So you're literally talking about buildings and houses that are sitting on an international border and thus have two addresses, one Dutch and one Belgian. And the reason for that was that Barl, when it was first, I guess, founded, it was sitting on a marshland where little bits of the property were paying their taxes to the local Dutch duke, and he decided to just transfer the rest to the Belgian lord, the neighboring Belgian lord. So that's what happened with the city. And of course, this led to a lot of smuggling back and forth between Holland and Belgium. For example, Dutch butter would be smuggled into Belgium, and Belgian fireworks would be smuggled into the Netherlands after World War II, literally by walking them across the street. as I said, some of the buildings would be straddling the border. So, for example, you would have cafes right on the border there, and Netherlands closes its cafes earlier than Belgium, so people sitting on the Dutch side would have to move to the Belgian tables to continue their patronage at the cafes. Yeah. I would say if I had to give the title of objectively messiest border in the world, it would go to the India-Bangladesh border. This border consists of a total of 198 enclaves. The majority of them are first order, which means just a simple enclave within the other country. Second order, 24 of them, which means an enclave within an enclave. And then only one of them, the only one in the world, in fact, is a third order, which is an enclave within an enclave within an enclave. Yeah. WTF. Let's zoom in on that third order enclave. It's located right there. We're going to zoom in further. This is the 51st enclave called the Halakagrabari. And it is a piece of India within Bangladesh, within India, within Bangladesh. What's that? We're talking like maybe 10 square blocks, something like that, tiny. Which begs the question, why are these people so interested in making such a mess of the border? It took until 2015 for India and Bangladesh to sign a treaty to exchange enclaves. But then there's a question of locals, you know, who are they citizens of, who do they pay taxes to? The reason the border is so complicated is that two kings in the area literally played card games and poker and with high stakes. and said, oh, well, you win that part, but I win this part. And that's how you got the third order enclave. I have a question for you guys. I'll just ask you to raise your hands. How far from Live is the nearest exclave? Is it A, 9,000 miles, B, 4,000 miles, C, 500 miles, or D, trick question, the northwest angle, which is 730 miles away in Minnesota, is technically an exclave? Who says A? B? C? D? Okay, so those of you who answered D, you're half correct. The northwest angle is technically an exclave, and it is 730 miles away, but there's actually an enclave closer. So let's go over the first two first. So exactly 9,000 miles away, I measured, is the Temburong District in Brunei. 4,000 miles away from Ann Arbor are the two Barls. And 500 miles away is something called the Kentucky Bend. That's right, we have an exclave between US states. So do you remember when I told you earlier that the South Carolinian and North Carolinian borders may have been drawn with moonshine in the blood? Well, it turns out that that also happened between Kentucky and Tennessee. They were supposed to follow a line called the 36 and a half parallel, which would be a continuation of the Virginia North Carolina border. And if you look on the map today, you'll see this like weaving and zigzagging. It's kind of crazy. And the border crosses the Mississippi River three times, but they didn't realize that. So they basically just said, okay, westernmost point where it crosses the Mississippi River is going to be the end of Kentucky, which leaves a piece of Kentucky completely separate from Kentucky, like Tennessee, Missouri, Kentucky. That is the one exclave we have within the United States. Forever alone land. You guys may be asking, well, we have all these situations where land is fought over between two parties and it's disputed and they want to, you know, both sides want the same piece of land. Well, there's actually a piece of land in the world that is claimed by no parties. It's called Bir Tawil. It is the most unwanted place in the world. And the reason for that is that it neighbors something called the Halaib Triangle, which sits on the Red Sea. And of course, as I mentioned before, oil fields are a big deal. So both Egypt and Sudan want the Halaib Triangle because it gives them coastline along the Red Sea. And so Egypt commissioned surveyors to draw a border in 1899, which would be just a straight line, east-west. And Sudan said, nope, we're not going to do that. 1902, they drew a separate border, for some reason dipping south and then going back north. And so today, Egypt says that the Halaib Triangle is theirs and Bir Tawil is Sudanese. Sudan says, no, Bir Tawil is Egyptian because Halaib is ours. So it's literally claimed by neither country. If you're thinking of going there and claiming it as your own and building a house, forget about it. It's really harsh desert. It's practically useless. Well, that's it for me. Thank you so much for nerding out with me, guys. This was a lot of fun.